Off the Ball Rugby.
With a lot of success, everyone's going to be a lot more critical. I completely understand it, and that comes with being successful. But if we actually track the impact that Leo has had in his time as head coach, I don't think there's another coach out there that matches it or even comes close.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official staff sponsor of the GAA.
Welcome along to the Power Rankings for the world's newly crowned greatest sport. Tommy Rooney and Matthew Brennan are with us as always. How are you doing, lads?
Good to be back. There was some hard accusations going around last week. I did tune in about me running away from my problems after Westmeath's loss to Galway, but I'm back now after back-to-back loss.
Be shamed to have been this week after Westmeath out of the championship, lose again. God knows how that'll affect the Power Rankings, Tommy. And more sleepless nights since the weekend. These Tuesday mornings are just, must be such a relief for you. They're out now. Nothing can go wrong. You've done
the work. Exactly. Monday nights are tough, lads. They're tough. And I don't know that you noticed, but when I originally submitted the Power Rankings, I got a spark of inspiration and I re-edited them last night, and then they got another edit at 1 a.m. as well. So
our producers love you so much. The graphic
makers.
There's
a lot on the line. There's a lot on the line. And Matthew, I'm delighted that you have shown face this week. And there was no shade thrown at you last week. It was simply just pointed out that you had been on holidays on a previous week and you jumped on when Westmeath won. And then you're on holidays on another week.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking for consistency,
buddy.
That's
all right, Tommy. That's all right, Tommy. But not to give too much of a peek behind the curtain, we obviously record these on a Tuesday. The last time I was off was the Monday.
They go out on a Tuesday.
Yeah, they go out
on
a Tuesday. Yeah. So, but the last time after the Leinster final, where I took the Monday off, obviously to go and celebrate with my fellow county men after we won our first Leinster title in 22 years or 24 years, whatever it was. 22 years.
It was a Monday show, was it?
And it was a Monday show.
Yeah.
It was a Monday show. So, Tommy, that's why.
Also, in fairness, if you are off work, you would expect someone to pop in after a win and not necessarily come and.
What joy would you have gotten, Tommy, from me popping in after a loss? Well, that brought you joy. That says a lot about you.
Look, both of you are here after crippling defeats.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with me.
No.
Tommy is beyond county allegiance as the Power Rankings man, as we'll find out, I'm sure, when we get to Meath's position. Anyway, look, we know there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to go through. There's a lot of controversial rankings to discuss. But the Power Rankings on Off the Ball are with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA. And, look, we've been giving away tickets all year, let's face it. But it's getting good now, right?
It is.
So,
yeah,
Harvey Norman have very kindly given us tickets for both Saturday and Sunday quarterfinals in Croke Park this weekend. So we have... we are going to give away, I think it's two pairs for each day. So you can get them by telling us what you would change on Tommy's Power Rankings. Who would you move? Who's too high? Who's too low? Send your entry to WhatsApp 087-9180-180 or by email enter@offtheball.com. That's enter@offtheball.com. Tell us what day you want to go as well. To Saturday or Sunday, to the unbelievable quarterfinal weekend. And if this season has taught us anything, Tommy, it's that these games won't let us down.
No.
Because no weeks are letting us down at the moment.
Yeah, it's... And Croke Park, the sport takes on a life of its own, as we all know, both hurling and football in Croke Park. There's something extra there. And maybe it changes the pace of things a little bit too. It's going to be another... absolutely barnstorming weekend. I've really enjoyed the games in provincial grounds, I have to say, over the last couple of weeks. I know there was 21,000 packed into Clonus again on Sunday. There was
some year for the town of Clonus.
Unreal. And same with Killarney. You know, yeah. Killarney had 30-odd and maybe it was 25 on Saturday. And Castlebar had 15. So, you know, big numbers coming out in force. Obviously nothing quite on the Cork Hurlers, but it is, I think this weekend is going to be, surely we're going to get 50, 60 plus at these double headers.
Yeah, I think you're looking at 50, I would say. If you got 60, that'd be absolutely ridiculous. That'd be unbelievable.
Look, it all
maybe
depends.
Maybe I'm being ambitious.
Yeah. These
maybe
things all depend on the same thing. And it depends on, are the Dubs coming out? because there's only a certain amount from Kerry that will come up. We know that.
Yeah,
Tyrone will bring a big crowd, but it's a small county, you know? And you've got Galway, I wouldn't say the greatest travellers in the whole world. They'll have a good crowd.
Loud will bring a few.
There's no doubt about that. So will Monaghan. There'll be big crowds there. But are we getting to 60,000? Are the Dubs coming home? Have they seen enough that they want to go for a big day out in Croker? Or do they go and say, I don't want to go home sad after losing to Shane Walsh's boot?
That is a question.
Shane Walsh's two-pointers in the form he's in the weather we're going to have this week, lads, the ball could travel 100 yards.
Rory Began. God.
The hill broke out in one of the loudest roars I've heard from Dublin supporters in years after Collie Pascal's two-pointer in response to Jason McGee's moments before that. And Jason McGee's had woken up the Donegal fans from their slumber. And it can be really funny, like, when supporters get behind their teams, like, you can really feel it and teams can ride that momentum. But there's also a match, we spoke about it in Mullingar in the Westmeath Cavan game. Sometimes the tension from the crowd, the kind of, I just want this to be over. I want this to get over the line here. There's a big element of that in these football games too, where teams just want to get the round 1, 2, 3 out of the way, get to Crow Park and then have a cut. But like, it doesn't work like that, as we've seen.
It doesn't. Let's jump into it because we'll get to the couple of Talta Cup games first, because we'll start from the end. Slide D, Charlie, if you could, as always at this stage of year, doesn't have any changes. New York at 33, Waterford, London, Tipperary, Limerick, Antrim at 28, Carlow, Leitrim and 25 for Clare. Obviously none of those teams in action. If we bounce on to slide C, there have been a couple of changes. Unbelievably good Talta Cup semi-finals.
Yeah.
Torna here in the office is floating on air after Wicklow's unbelievable win. That moves them to 18 in the power rankings. Just starting at the bottom, Longford 24, Sligo 23, Wexford 22, Leash 21. Offaly drop a couple of places after that loss to Wicklow. Fermanagh in defeat, a one-point defeat to Down. Unbelievable season, really showed a lot and were unlucky. They move up a place in defeat, Tommy. I commend you on that one. That's good power ranking, I would say. Wicklow up to 18 and Down stay at 17. Although I would have to say you must have considered popping Down up into above Cavan and Kildare. Or is there like a holy line of demarcation that, you know, you can't
cross?
No, that line will break depending on how that Tatchin Cup final goes. I did think about it. I considered it. Down had been up there previously, but just that Fermanagh game, lads, went down to the last play again. And I've just a word on Fermanagh. I'm so impressed with that young group and how they've bounced back. And we've seen a lot of teams have really poor springs and then respond with a summer of fun and momentum and brilliant wins and shooting, and they have. I know the opposition, you can say the opposition haven't been, you know, the tightest defences they've played against, but Fermanagh's shooting over the last couple of weeks, their scoring rates has been off the charts. 121, 225, 327, 220, 124 all in the Talchin Cup, but don't forget 124 against Armagh in the Ulster Championship as well. So Fermanagh have been shooting the lights out and really impressed with the manner in which they got the most out of their Talchin Cup, and that would bring that group on even further. And then on the other side, like, Wicklow were so close to promotion. They were very unlucky. They let us slip a big lead against Longford, and Longford pipped them to promotion to Division 3. But how Oisin McConville has got a tune out of these boys again. Last year, they went up and they gave a really good cut of it in Croke Park. Brilliant game with Limerick, fell just short. Well, I think there was 5 or 6 minutes to go in that game last year and it kind of swung in Limerick's favour. This year, like, just the manner in which Wicklow reeled Offaly in late on, kicking 226, all six of their starting forwards scoring. Really impressive stuff, and the job McConville has done there, you really have to commend it.
Yeah, there's a good indicator there as well. It's something you've mentioned a few times, Tommy, about like the league being its own thing and the provincial championships being their own thing and then the All-Ireland Series being their own thing, the Talton Cup kind of falling into that category as well. You look at Offaly, who had a pretty terrible league campaign, albeit in Division 2. Wicklow didn't get what they wanted out of the league. Fermanagh were very poor in the league. Down maybe slightly different in that there was a life possibility of them being in the All-Ireland Series itself. But the other three teams kind of show that whether intentionally or not, you can choose what you focus on, or you can draw a line under things and kick on from it. And I think the Talent Cup has only really backed up what we've seen in the from the All-Ireland series as well itself, in that you can pick and choose your battles.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, so like Wicklow, I remember listening to Oisín McConville on the day after that. He was on the GAA social show. Yeah. And he was just like, I just don't know. We just didn't turn up. We didn't, like, there was no reason for it.
Yeah.
It's just we were flat from day one. And it was like, right, they're not going to back up what they did, where they ran Dublin so close to the Leinster Championship, like where they as genuine a close call as Dublin will ever have against Wicklow. And they're not going to back it up. And then they've just gone from strength to strength. And it's just, again, like, it's talking about old hat at this stage, but like the idea that we didn't have this competition for years,
it's,
or that
mad,
we didn't have teams playing at their own level deep into the summer, with the chance of doing something, with the chance of having a story to tell, instead of just, like, you know, losing a Leinster quarter final, going into a qualifier and then going home. And it's just like county football not really being a thing for a lot of these counties. You know, it's just about kind of like showing up, putting your thing, and then concentrating on your club game. And, you know, it's just, thank God that it exists, you know, like, it's class. And then you do have a kind of a perfect final then, Tommy, because you have the kind of the team for which it would mean everything versus the team who kind of feel like they need this stepping stone to make sure they're in the All-Ireland next year.
100%. A huge amount of pressure on Down. And I think one thing Wicklow can take from it is, like, I know we played that clip of McGuinness last week talking about the form book in football, but Down beat Donegal. Wicklow should have beaten Dublin. Dublin beat Donegal, who defeated Kerry three times this year. Wicklow, but on a more serious scale, Wicklow have performed in Croke Park. They have turned up in Croke Park and they have produced really good performances 2 years in a row, and that has to stand for something. And I think that's going to be on, it's going to be on the Saturday, I think, of the All-Ireland football semi-finals. That's going to be a really, really interesting game.
Yeah. Okay, let's get to slide B. Here's where the controversy starts. Kildare is still at 16, Cavanagh 15, Derry at 14. No surprises or changes there. Meath, very disappointing season. One win out of four. They dropped to 13th place. Roscommon drop another place down to 12th, and Westmeath drop a place. Now, Dublin have moved up two places. Congratulations to them. They beat Donegal and knocked them out of the championship. Mayo are at 9, by the way, just to finish that. Mayo don't go up either. So it is tight up there, right? But obviously we know who that leaves in slide A, which we'll get to in a second, right? Tommy, I'm just going to put out there, we're going to talk about Dublin as our county story of the week, and, you know, the redemption story of little old Dublin. And they've come from nowhere with no fans or no fanfare and no manager for half the year. People will hear my accent, they'll know where I'm from, and they'll be surprised to know, but no great graph for Dublin football. And in fact, during their much admired six in a row era, I probably didn't want them to win a match, you know, just out of, like, sporting, you always go for the underdog, etc. No dislike for them. And I think I'm surprised at how I'm feeling the underdog story a little bit. I'm finding myself cheering on the Dubs a little bit in a way that I haven't since I was a kid. And as well as that, I also feel like they've a bit of a hard done by story this year, and, you know, Ger Brennan's been suspended for a long time and nobody else got similar punishments. They have a few gripes here and there that they've mentioned over the last few weeks, and now they're bloody 10th in the power rankings despite an unbelievable win over Donegal. Tommy, you're just out to get the Dubs like everybody else.
I don't know what you want me to do. Like, do you want me to
put them up to number 3?
Yeah. Lads, of all the things I laboured over this week, the Dubs,
he gets so insulted, Dubs, doesn't he?
The Dubs intent was not one of them. I didn't, like, if Dublin and Kieran Kilkenny and Niall Scully and Brian Howard really care about moving up the power rankings, they'll back it up this week and beat Galway. What an unbelievable performance. And, you know, we're using this mode of a slot to talk about games and matches and teams and form, and we have a bit of fun with it, but it obviously means a lot as well. Dublin were underdogs. And they came out with such a phenomenal game plan. But lads, I've said it a few times, that second half felt like two super heavyweight boxers falling over each other, stumbling around the ring, not able to land a punch, just waiting. Like, Dublin should have beaten Donegal by 10 points in that second half. They should have. Donegal, they were done. Like, the Donegal sideline had their hands on the hips, looking on as if it was last July against Kerry. They were gone emotionally, physically, mentally, and Dublin kept missing chance after chance after chance. And then Paddy Small gets the goal, and you're like, they're about to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously McGarry touches the ball on the ground, doesn't hand it back. It's moved forward. Everyone's going nuts about it. But to the rule, McNally was spot on, the referee. But Dublin's extra time performance, that to me, as a football fan, as somebody who appreciates the underdogs, I was so impressed with how, I call him young Sean Guyton. He's not young, he's 25. Sean Guyton's been around for about 7 years. He was a minor in 2018. Wow. Like, where's this guy been going on the radar? And I would imagine there's a lot of footballers under the new rules. And Ger Brennan said he's trialled 163 players this year.
Yeah.
From last
Jack
year.
Jack McCaffrey told you that as well, like the amount of people that came in at the start of the year was like, maybe it's not even this year that they'll find the team that they...
No.
Exactly. Yeah. And maybe like that team under Jim Gavin that won six in a row, that came back and won in 23 in the last dance, they were so ridiculously good that even players that were on the periphery would come in for a couple of years. They might be 36 to 40. They drop away. We might know nothing about these guys. Those guys could have been inter-county footballers for a decade for other counties. So I think there's a lot of Sean Guidance potentially out there. Shooters. He's such a natural footballer. I didn't need to see too much to know that he was going to do a bit of damage. Kicked a two-pointer against Westmeath, if you remember, in the Leinster final. And I was watching him in the warm-up in the Hill, because you're looking at the Dublin bench, lads. And you're looking at the Dublin bench and you're going, Lahiff, Liam Smith, Cian Murphy, Sean Guyton, Josh Bannon, McGarry, who obviously came off the bench last year and did well, Tim Deering, Owen Kennedy, and Sean Bugler, who's injured.
Unproven.
Like, you're looking there and you're like, where's the firepower?
Yeah.
And this guy, Sean Guyton, comes in and hits a beautiful two-pointer, clips over a lovely one with the right, and then takes a point when maybe a goal is on. But like, what a cameo. But Dublin are still the Dublin team that lost to Louth in Croke Park, to Westmeath in Croke Park, that got ran to a score by Wicklow in Aughrim. The Dublin team that Cavan could have beaten if they had their shooting boots on. So I get what you're saying, but I don't know what you want me to do.
No, I don't. Like, forget it. We're too far into the conversation now to be worried about the actual power rankings part. Yeah. But like, what I would say in praise of Dublin, right? In praise of them, I think your extra time point, and we mentioned it yesterday, I think they didn't get over the line because there's a confidence deficit in that team, you know, and there's no way they should be losing not only the overall picture of the second half, but the 3-point lead with time up without Donegal scoring a goal, no matter what way the referee made the decision or whatever. That shouldn't be happening. That's a really poor thing for Dublin to do. I think that suggests a confidence deficit. But
it's very un-Dublin-like as well.
It's un what we think of as Dublin-like, but we don't know what this team are like.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And then they go in, they have their break, and they blitz Donegal. I think that's such a good sign. As you say, maybe Donegal were there for the taking, and we'll talk about them in a minute, and they were there for the taking.
Yeah.
But they took them. It took them a little bit longer. But we've seen that happen to teams. We've seen that happen to teams where they throw it away. It happened this year. I'm trying to think of a match. Right,
Westmeath did it maybe three times this year. Westmeath did it.
Well, Westmeath in Dublin was probably the one, wasn't it? Where Westmeath should have like threw it away in extra time, and then we're like, this is only going one way. Dublin are going to take this, and Westmeath come out and proved themselves in extra time.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Dublin did. I'm really impressed by that. And then the other thing I'll say that's less in their praise, but is more in speaking or improvement, Tommy. That bench we've been talking about all year is not having firepower or not being unproven anyway, and we'll see. And maybe a couple of guys will come from it, and I think that'll ultimately count against them. But their starting 15 is getting stronger all the time. I know he went off holding his hamstring, and I hope it's not anything real, but Conor Callaghan looked like Conor Callaghan. He was holding the top of his hamstring. He wasn't limp, but I don't know if it was precaution.
I think
Conor looked like Conor. you mentioned Colin Basquel. Like, where's he been? Oh, wow. Do you know what I mean? Like, and he's someone I forgot about up until last week.
He's had his injury troubles as
well.
You
know, exactly. Yeah, Paddy Small looks like he's there. All these lads who, you know.
Lee Gannon was phenomenal as well, I thought, throughout the game, too.
Well,
he's someone who struggled big time.
Gannon.
He had that bad miss. He did have that bad miss, yeah.
Gannon was good, but he's not back to where he could get to. Yeah. And he's not. Like, Gannon, I wouldn't have put Gannon in the phenomenal bracket the last day.
I thought he was good, John.
No, I wouldn't have. I think his decision making was off, same as it was against Loud. But it will come, and that lad is a super footballer. The thing on Basquel, right? Obviously, All Star 23. I'm right, am I in that? I think you were an All Star 23.
Sounds about right. Yeah, definitely towards the end of the second Dublin burst. Was that 23 that won the All Ireland?
Yeah,
that.
But we've never seen Collie Basquel grab a game by the scruff of the neck as a leader in the way that he did. And this is like, Dublin need new leaders to emerge, and fellas who are maybe the third or fourth best players in an attack before becoming number one or number two. Like, Costello was hampered at the weekend very clearly. Khan has scored like 318 in 3.5 games. Like, his presence alone, he's just so good. Like, and then Paddy Small is like so dangerous and giving us glimpses. But lads, the phenomenal bracket at the weekend was Kieran Kilkenny, it was Niall Scully. Like, those two, they were the demons in that Dublin side that drove them to beat Donegal at the weekend. How are we on Westmead and Roscommon and Meath?
Just to finish on Dublin, because that's a county story of the week, I just want to finish. I do think that it's probably worth noting that as the year goes on, there are players, so they are too reliant on the leftovers from the great team. It's we're in Kerry 87, 88, 89 territory, where you want those lads to be just a little addition. And if they didn't have Kieran Kilkenny or Conor Callaghan this year, they'd be in big, big trouble. Like, you know what I mean? And that's where they are. But the more we see them, the more the year goes on. Lads like Charlie McMorrow and, you know, these, they are coming to the fore a bit more. They do feel a little bit more. You think of them more as a part of this team. You think of them more at home. And I just wonder I think this could be a really big stepping stone year for Dublin. I don't think they're going to beat Galway, and I certainly don't think they're going to win the All-Ireland. But I do wonder if you're taking what you've got this year and you'll say, right, we have to start thinking of a life post Kilkenny. Do you know what I mean? If you could even get in one more year with those lads to bring those guys up to a level, I think there might be a good core there.
I think you're on the money. And I think if you look at it from Gerard Brennan's perspective, regardless of what happens against Galway, and I think they're going to be right in that game. I think the four games the weekend, Tyrone might surprise us. You know, I think it could be a little closer than we anticipate at the outset here. But Dublin making Gerard Brennan, relegation in the league, the 12-week ban, losing a Leinster final, losing in Croke Park in back-to-back games, the Neller or Nowhere kind of chatter, where it looked like they kind of lost. If Donegal came out and wiped them, that would have been a very difficult post-match press conference for Gerard Brennan. It would have been a very difficult couple of weeks and months for Gerard Brennan to try and get a bit of momentum, to try and rouse the team again. But now he comes back, he stands on the line, and he's masterminded. Like, a brilliant, phenomenal win against Donegal, against one of the All-Ireland contenders. Like, that is such fuel for the winter, whatever happens. And I fully agree with you. The next step for Dublin from here, the next cohort of players coming through, even the young fellas there, like Nathan Dorn goes off injured. We haven't really mentioned him. Like, that's going to be a big loss the next day as well. But Doran, McMorrow, Owen Kennedy, Pat O'Coffey, Byrne going to another level.
Yeah, he's great.
This is a huge step in that direction.
You want to talk about Westmeath, torture Matthew some more before we move on to page one?
Well, it's not that, just that. It's kind of treat them there. Westmeath was common Meath, right? Division 2 champs, Connacht champs, Leinster champs, all crashing out on the same weekend as the Ulster champions.
Yeah.
Like, they can take... I graded the seasons this morning on Off the Ball Breakfast with Ger and Seamus Flanagan of the four losers who were dumped out. I gave Donegal a D. I gave Armagh a C. I gave Meath a C+. And I give Westmead an A-. And I don't know whether that's being too kind to Westmead, but what a brilliant season. For Roscommon, they got to find something in the winter to get beyond Connacht. Like, they need to just figure out how they can take that next step. And I think Meath will learn more from this season than they did from 2025 when they got to the All-Ireland semi-final.
Why is
that?
I hope
they do. Because you're after losing three championship games, Matthew, by a score. You concede four goals against Westmeath. People say you're caught in the hop. I think if Jack Flynn scores a late two-pointer or Matthew Costello scores a goal that day and they get out of Dodge against Westmeath, I don't think you're learning much. They mismanage an extra man against Cork when they should have been out of sight at halftime. They cannot win that game with an extra man with 10 to go. I think if you get out of Dodge that day, you're not learning lessons from it. And then total mismanagement again against Mayo. Like, they can still look back on this season and go, we can go to another level again next year. But they're going to need a big winter. And I'm sure there's a clatter of them off to America. I hope they get that out of their system as well, because
I think that's a very positive way of looking at things, Tommy. And maybe, and it could be right, as you know, you absolutely could be on the money. The other side of the coin is that Meath didn't build on what they did last year. And, you know, there was a chance there to go. I don't think there was a chance to jump a level this year. I think there was a chance to consolidate, but they didn't consolidate. So they're starting on the back foot now. What you have is the other side of that is Division One next year, and that to build it, and that's what you're wintering towards, is a cut at Division One and playing against the top teams every week and kind of seeing that level on a constant basis. They only played four championship games this year. Derry are a team in crisis, like, you know, and they're finished, really. Like, I mean,
Meade have never won in Derry. Meade have never won.
I'm not saying it wasn't a big deal, but this was the year to win in Derry.
Okay, you could say the last 3 years. Like, Derry are still a dangerous animal, and I wouldn't diss that. Look, I fully agree with you, and the side of the coin that you're pushing there, that argument, you can absolutely stand over that.
Yeah, Cork are better than we thought they were. And Westmeath were definitely better than we thought they were at the time. I completely stand by that. And Mayo, it's a good game. They threw it away, though. You can't get 1 point after the 51st minute, no matter how many men you have on the field. And I know you want to talk about that, too. So, like, I don't know. I'm just a bit more uncertain, I suppose. And I don't really have a strong opinion. My other side of it was a devil's advocate argument. I don't have a strong opinion on it, but I wouldn't be as sure.
So whatever carrot they thought was there as well, as far as going and winning a provincial title, which in my head would have been the main goal, aside from maybe getting promoted from Division 1 and all that sort of stuff, or to Division 1. But the fact that they've now watched Louth beat them and go and win the Leinster final, and then watch Westmeath beat them and go and win a Leinster championship, I think that'll be something that'll be at the forefront for them next year. So it's not like, I know you're not suggesting this, but it's not like all hope is lost for them. But I would agree in that there is... the amount of kind of hype and optimism there was around Meath at the beginning of this year has definitely been dealt a blow by the way in which they've handled their matches. Because it wasn't something we saw last year in that they were throwing away games in the way they have been this year, I would suggest.
I think, and we can all be guilty of it, with a lot of teams, I think we're guilty at the minute of getting too high and too low. And I was making this case about Mayo throughout the season. Mick, you made it really well about Tyrone throughout the last couple of months. I think we're in such a new era of evolution in football right now. And there's a lot of new management teams. There's a lot of young footballers out there. And I got accused of being like Jake Humphries in the Football Pod a couple of weeks back when I said progress isn't linear. But I really think, and it's often said about sport, you can learn so much more about yourself when you're beaten. Sometimes you get away with it. Meade got away with it in 2025. Meade got away with it. Meade got to an All-Ireland semi-final. And the floor was wiped with them by Donegal. They were not able to contest with Donegal in that All-Ireland semi-final. You know, they threw punches, they attempted two-pointers, but they weren't able to live with them. And I think if Meade got away with it again this year, I'm not quite sure that those players in that group would drive themselves to the levels that they need to get to. Meade want to win All-Ireland titles. Meade want to win Leinster titles. Meade want to be playing Division 1 football, and they should be. They spent 20 years in purgatory. And I think you said hype, Matthew, and optimism. Optimism for sure, because it's been such drudgery for so long. And I think a lot of counties were browbeaten by how controlled Dublin were, how defensive other teams were, how far the gap felt from the top to the bottom. But that gap is leveling all the time now. And so many counties between 2 and 13 have an opportunity to continue to close that gap if they put in a big winter. Dermot McCabe didn't shied away from it the last day. He said, we got to start working now for next year. Kieran McGeaney was asked in the press conference, when do you start working for next year? And McGeaney joked and said, whenever the GAA allow me, which is technically November. But I'm telling you now, maybe Armagh will take a bit of a break, but those counties, they need to be doing programs, they need to be working towards certain stuff from September onwards. Like, and they absolutely are doing it, whether they're doing it collectively or not. There's no way you're catching up on the best if you're not working towards 27 very soon.
But I just wonder if my concern was, are they sprinted into it? Are they waiting for that WhatsApp group to get set back up? Are they waiting for it all to get going again in the way they would have been? And even last year, see, that's what I'm saying. The semi-final is an interesting one that we hadn't talked about. We should probably move on from me, but how much does that take out of your confidence as well? Because they had the dream year and then they're hammered. You know what I mean?
I don't think there's any lack of confidence there, though. I wouldn't think so myself.
All right.
I personally, but I don't know. It may be more of a reality check than a confidence blow, I would say.
What about Westmead's end to the year then? So it was an amazing year. I said Tommy's given him an A minus, right?
Yeah.
What happens in Galway, you know, I think they were probably the only team in those games last week that were sort of well beaten, if not on the scoreboard, right? But, you know, they did okay. But that's fine. We kind of thought that would happen. But it was this game. This is a weird game. Like, they were, I think in the last quarter alone, they came from 6 points down to level to 8 points down in the space of I don't know how long, but it was they were bailing themselves out with goals a little bit, but it did seem like they were the second best team.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think it is a little bit different to the easy comparisons to make of Loud going and winning the Leinster Championship last year and not kind of building on it and not getting anywhere from it. I think this is a completely different situation in that. And it is an excuse, and I think it's a valid enough excuse and I'm sure every county is dealing with injuries in their own little way, but that Westmead panel is absolutely obliterated with injuries. Even from the lads who are out injured and from the lads who are actually playing, half of the panel is strapped up to the gills. You can see it. You can see that they're all have some form of a bandage or whatever on them, and that's not to take away from the lads that are coming in, and what the success of Westmead this year has been built on is that next man up mentality, and we're throwing you in and you're sink or swim, and majority of them have swam. And it's probably just gotten to the point where there's a few too many in there, and with the like of Ray Kinnellan not playing at the weekend and coming on for 10 minutes, the impact he had when he did come on, he claimed a couple of kickouts, kicked a two-pointer. I don't think there's any air of disappointment at all around it. I don't think there's any air of we've a missed opportunity. The game against Monaghan is 50-50 on paper, I suppose.
It's
an opportunity, but they were unlucky in that sense as well, in that they got the home game against Cavan, obviously off the back of reaching the provincial final and got the victory there by hook or by crook, and then a tough draw away in Salt Hill, a tough draw away in Clonus. I don't think the last two games have taken away from the year in any way, shape, or form. And I know they were well beaten in Galway. Like I said, they were well beaten. They were beaten by the better team. There was 2 points in that game with a Galway kick out and 50 seconds to play. Yeah. You win that kick out, you kick it too.
The circumstance.
Yeah, and that's not to suggest that they were anywhere near the level of Galway that day. They weren't, but they also gave away some silly goals in that game as well. But to put a bow in it, I think Westmead have had an absolutely brilliant year.
Can I just say one thing that, this will be Tommy, you'll see this every week, and any of us that go to GAA games, it won't be news to anybody, but I also think it's also worth pointing out when you see it. So I was chatting to Adrian Barry, renowned Westmead man, and his renowned Westmead kids now, even though they've grown up in Dublin, which I love to see as a personal, someone that chose against the blue and the navy, brought his kids up to Clonus for that game after the highs of the Leinster final. And you know what, I was just chatting to him afterwards, he was showing me pictures of him with all the players and Mark McHugh and everything like that, and it's like, you're after losing a game, knock yourself out of the All-Ireland, it's been a really disappointing performance, regardless of whether they'll overall be happy or not. And it's just like lads out there for 45 minutes taking a picture with every single fan. Every county does it. It's not that I'm not elevating Westmead in it, and I just don't think any county has found wanting in it. But it is an unbelievable thing. And it's also, I do feel like we ask a lot of them to always be doing this after a game. But you must see that every week, Tommy. But it's again, it's just like while you're trying to grab them for a word.
I just think,
where else would you see it? This is the thing. It's like, I know we exceptionalize GA a little bit and we can overdo that. But it's like, where else would you see that?
I do think it's special. And I do get you. I do think sometimes GA can be exceptionalized, but sometimes also we brush by things that are really good, really
positive.
That's
exactly why I wanted to stop on it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it is such a brilliant thing, and I hope it continues. And that's why the games in provincial grounds were, I think, so brilliant over the last little while. And I think we keep Croke Park to be special and to elevate the game. But when you see the pitches flooded, even at halftime, kids going out with hurls and footballs kicking around at halftime, I love that. I just think there's something special we have here. And if somebody had landed in Ireland for the first time, they'd be like, what is going on here? Which is class. And I see it. Look, Rory Began a couple of weeks back, 2 weeks ago, I think it was 45 minutes from when I attempted to try and record a piece of him, I said, you know what, I'm going to leave him here, to when I met him in the tunnel and he started slagging me about our predictions on the football pod. Conor McCarthy was the same. I see it all the time. Every county, as you said, Mick, and it's class.
Yeah.
Just one more point on Westmeath before we move off, because we are going to be done with them now. There is a slight thing with them too, and I know I say they've had an unbelievable year and they've gone out the way they have, and judging based off what you hear from Mark McHugh, who talks so well after every game, there will absolutely be no stone left unturned going into next year, and I'm sure if there's anyone planning for it, it's him. There is a real live possibility that Westmead end up in the Tottenham Cup next year, and that's something they have to do everything in their power to avoid, because that would set them back a serious amount, I imagine, if they, you know, they're going to be in Division 3, and there's no guarantee, even if you win Division 3, as we've seen with Down, that they'll be able to get into the All-Ireland Series, and then outside of that, you have to reach your provincial final again. And there's going to be somewhat of a target on the back now, in that there's going to be no surprise element to them, where who are these unknown quantity coming here and beating us, and that's the only thing you would warrant with it, or you would caveat it with. But
provincial draws matter a huge amount now. Whenever they're done, we'll all be annoyed when they happen in September or something, but they'll matter a huge amount for the Celtic Cup stuff, because, you know, if I don't know if they're bringing back the seeding in Munster again, they put it off for a year or whatever, but that's a big one, because that's a Clare, Tipper, or Limerick who could be guaranteed a place. And then obviously you have it in the possibility, I suppose, in Leinster as well.
Ulster in a sense with Cavan too. They were loitering on the edge, I suppose, last year getting relegated.
Before we move on, just the Hawkeye moment of the week, which is the close call that everybody's talking about. Tommy, this comes from Slide B, really, because the Mayo Mead sending off is kind of what you wanted to talk about, but close refereeing calls all the way through the weekend, really.
Yeah, no, it wasn't really the Mayo Mead call. There's a couple of big calls, and I've seen a lot of chatter online about them as well. It was more a discussion about maybe referees and maybe the position that some of them have been put in. Like, I think I've probably irked some Mead fans. I haven't really bought into the hard luck story around the Ronan Jones right card. I really like Ronan as a footballer and think he's a fabulous fella to have involved in the county team. And I know the journey he went on to get back, but while I think he was unlucky, I think you're at the mercy of a linesman if you react. And on another day, Jack Coyne could have got a black card for tripping him originally, but you just can't react. And even if Jones got a black, which he probably should have got rather than a red, it would have been 10 crucial minutes in the bin. But a lot of people have rang me and they're like, Sean Hurston is a linesman and his club mate is on the backroom team for Mayo. And likewise on Sunday, Martin McNally is referee from Carduff and Monaghan, and Jason McGee, a Donegal midfielder, is a club man is now transferred into Carduff and Monaghan. I think it's a tricky conversation. And I just want to, first of all, say that I don't think in any way can the integrity of the referees or linesmen be questioned in that regard. But social media has obviously discussed it quite a bit, and I've got a lot of phone calls and WhatsApps about it. The Hurston connection with Paddy Talley has come up a few times in All-Ireland finals. The counter-argument to it is Paddy Talley's been involved with a lot of counties, and does that mean that Sean Hurston is just not allowed to referee an All-Ireland final if Paddy Talley is somewhere involved in a 30-man backroom team? I don't think that has any impact on proceedings.
Do we even know that they like each other? Do we even know they're friends?
I've no idea.
Just because people live near you doesn't mean anything. And it's like,
could actually go the other way.
But also, who's thinking about the fourth in command on the sideline during the match? Like,
I'm telling you. Who's thinking about it? People on the outside are talking about it and thinking about it. I just wonder, is there a way...
But a referee's not, is what I mean. No. Sorry.
No. And like, I know from talking to referees and some of the work they do, like a lot of the top referees in the country work with sports psychologists, and they are not looking at names or faces. They're looking at numbers and jerseys. And like, I don't know how many times Jason McGee has played with Clough and Monaghan. I would hazard a guess that you could count it on one hand. He's only recently transferred in. I know he got an injury in his first game last year. So I highly doubt the two lads.
He also got a black card at the weekend.
Yeah. And he got black carded at halftime. So I just think, I don't know. I think Martin McNally is one of the top referees in the country. Likewise, Sean Herson. I think maybe we got to give these guys a little bit more credit rather than some of the chatter and conversation that's been happening, because it's Ireland, lads. Let's not forget that we all have connections and we all have people we know down the road, or our family are married into another county. And I just wonder as well, though, is there a way that maybe it could be avoided sometimes? You know, maybe if it's a bit more egregious, a bit more obvious, that I'd hope that the people at the top of the refereeing bodies would avoid clashes like that. But again,
But we shouldn't be giving in to the lunatics either, you know. And look, I mean, I've been one of those lunatics. We all have. Like, I mean, but that doesn't mean I'm right. Like, just because I've done it, or that, you know, it's nonsense, and it's questioned the integrity, and for nothing, for a game of hurling or football. Like, you know what I mean? And I do think there's a huge amount to be said for just being a little bit more transparent with refereeing. It's like, it's funny. Anthony Daly was talking about the fact that they had James Owens in their ears in the RT studio.
For the Dublin
Clare game at the weekend. And it's funny, the couple of decisions that the crowd went mad about, right, were wrong, and they remained wrong, but Daly said what his thinking was, right, or whatever. But everything else, it was kind of like, he's explaining what he's doing, he's talking as he's going. They become much more human beings and less Bond villains. I just wonder, should we just have mic'd up referees altogether? Like, you know, I'd say there'd be a bit of cursing issues going on in GA.
More so from the players, I'd imagine, yeah.
Yeah. I just think it'd be no harm seeing them as human beings. Like, people don't think... Like, people might like, you know, Matthew Carley or anything like that, but I don't think anybody thinks he's a moustache-twirling villain either.
I also think there's enough reasons to not want to be a referee as is. And if you start digging into stuff like this, it just adds to
where
the list
you live
of reasons.
Or who you live near.
Yeah, it adds to the list of reasons as to why someone might not want to go and be a referee. And look, listen, we all have issues with referees at various different points in times. You know, like, they're not perfect in the same way none of us are perfect, but we need as many referees as we can get. You know?
I also look, the GAA lads have done a lot of give respect, get respect campaigns, big recruitment drives for referees. I genuinely think the biggest thing they could do is strengthen that referees union, have that bit more representation, where maybe during the week, if there's big calls, there's actually somebody coming on and discussing it somewhere. Maybe, you know,
Howard Webb and Michael Owen.
Maybe not quite that, but I genuinely think that referees have such an impact now that maybe there was somebody who could speak for them. I'm not saying just Pat McEnany, but somebody in regard. Yeah. You know, Maurice Deegan has done a little bit of punditry with RT or BBC, but I think there could be something better done there. I think Enda McGinley referred to McNally's decision on McGarry's pickup and not putting the ball down. And there's probably 16, 17 people who have access to that referee's mic. There's a lot of people listening. The umpires, or the linesman, sorry, I think both called it to McNally's attention, because McNally, I think it turned that the ball wasn't handed back. Do you know, like, the ball wasn't handed back. So I get it was harsh on Dublin, but it's
in the current
call.
Rules, it was the right call. I'm sorry. At the time, I noticed it was like, okay, they're not being like silly. But there was a delay there. They wanted, there was 5 seconds left in the clock. It wouldn't have been human not to just like delay it very, very slightly so they couldn't get the ball in. They overdid it and they got done for it. And it wasn't the end of the world. Like, they still won the game. I also think that Meath fans, like, it's funny, we're so one-eyed the way we look at GAA, and we're all the exact same. But Meath fans saying like that their player was hard done by and that's why they lost the game and all. It's like Conor O'Donoghue got sent off for nothing against them and Cork still won the match at the end. You know what I mean? These things just happen over the course of a year.
Colm O'Callaghan, yeah.
Who did I say? Conor O'Donoghue plays Dublin Hurling. Sorry, Colm O'Callaghan, yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's
It levels itself out to...
Yeah, that's why I didn't really get too into the Ronan Jones thing. I think Meade lost that game in other ways. Yeah. But... just in the referee thing, I don't know if I articulated myself properly there, but I think leadership-wise is at the top of the game, it could be so much better for referees. I think the manner in which linesmen are set up, the manner in which they're bringing through a new era referees could be so much better. And maybe micing them up could be the way, where it just clarifies what's happening. Because a referee decision, mistake, call is having such an impact now in Gaelic football, and they're so important to the game.
Okay. Someday we'll have nothing to talk about and we'll get through the show a bit quicker. But yeah. Here we go, 45 minutes in. Let's see who you have top of the power rankings, Tommy. It's Kerry. What a surprise. Kerry and Galway stay at 1 and 2. Cork jumping up two places to 3 despite not playing. Loud jumping up two places to 4 despite not playing. Tyrone jumping up two places to 5 despite not playing. And that's because Armagh and Monaghan have both dropped 3 places.
Armagh and Donegal.
Armagh and Donegal. What did I say?
Monaghan.
Monaghan are in 8th place, unmoved, despite their win over Westmeath. Likewise, Mayo below them in 9th place, which we didn't mention. And Dublin, as we mentioned before. Armagh and Donegal are out of the championship, Tommy. They were obviously one of the 3 we've had all year. So I can understand not dropping them out of the top 8. But, I don't know where to start here. Cork. Like, do you genuinely believe that Cork and Mayo are the 3rd and 4th best teams in the country? I suppose.
I think,
in 2026,
going into the, I think on Tuesday the 23rd of June, at the week before the quarter final, I don't know what I was supposed to do here. Like, they're there by default. Sorry, Matt, give me 1 second here, because I have to explain my reasoning here.
Yeah,
they're not just there by default. Cork have gone up to Ballybuffet and beaten Donegal. Loud have been there and in the mix and in and around it, right, for a couple of years, and they've now beaten Armagh the last day. I think they can propel themselves to another level altogether. I think they can get to where Monaghan have gotten the last couple of years, which is All-Ireland semi-finals, where they felt like they should have won. I think Loud can become that if they can get the better of Monaghan, and I'm not quite sure they will. It's a 50-50 game. Cork can answer this question on Saturday at 4 o'clock. Are they the 3rd best team in the country? If they go and beat Mayo, absolutely, and they walk into the All-Ireland semi-finals, Cork are the 3rd best team in the country. I've described Cork as being Jekyll. I was on the RF podcast last night with Enda McGeerty and Ref and John Stagg from Mayo, and I described Cork as Jekyll and Hyde, and that is what they've been. They've been so hard to figure out and crack under Cleary and Kevin Walsh, but they've also been taking steps in the right direction and then having big, big knockbacks, big setbacks, big letdowns in big games. Now is the time to deliver when the eyes are on you, when there's a bit of support and a bit of momentum and you're in Croke Park. And I think Cork football might just do that this time. I'd give them the edge over Mayo, although I think Mayo are going to come with a bit of freedom and a bit of abandon and a bit of excitement this week. And they're a dangerous animal when they're like that.
Yeah, my only thing that just jumps out at me immediately is, and I know there's very little between 2 and 13 or whatever, as you said, very little, as in, you know, they could probably beat each other on any given day. Cork being 3 and Dublin being 10, and the both of them coming off victories against Donegal.
What happened to Donegal? So Donegal, this isn't their stat of the week, but it's not like an overdone stat, but I don't think if anybody's ever had a season like that where they go and win the league, they answer losing the All-Ireland final last year, they beat Kerry in the final, you know, when it matters, whatever about the rest of the league. Then they go into the championship, they lose their first game to Down. Okay, that can happen. Last thing that needs a big lot. They go to Killarney to face, you know, an understrength Kerry, but at the same time, they go into Killarney and hammer them. Like, the biggest statement win I can remember in the championship. And then they lose their next 2 games and they're out of the championship. They play 4 championship games, they lose 3, and in the one they win, they hammer the All-Ireland champions away from home. Explain that to me.
I can't remember if I've already said it or if I said it this morning, Ms. Flanagan, but the week before, Inishkeen and Ballybuffet is where those seasons ended. They could not recover. Armagh could not recover. Confidence-wise, they were shot. Rhythm-wise, they were done. Their plan, the master plan, was ripped up. They had to play week on week on week. And even if Armagh and Donegal got through at the weekend, I think their goose was cooked going into Croke Park. I think the manner in which they play, their style of football, I think the way they've trained, the way they had their eye, one eye on the big picture, I think they needed to get that 2 week bye into Croke Park and be on that perch alongside Galway, alongside Tyrone. I think they needed to be there. But Loud and Cork usurped them. And I don't know how else to explain it, lads, but like, that was not the Armagh I've watched throughout 2026. That was not the Donegal that I've seen for the last 2 years. And they were beaten by much better teams on the day. And like, Matthew made a point there about why didn't I just throw Dublin from 13 to 3? Cork have had a better year than Dublin. Cork have been far more consistent than Dublin. Dublin got relegated from Division 1. Cork got promoted from Division 2. The one time Cork have let us down was a Munster final that I really think they could have won and should have won. In terms of attitude, in terms of momentum, in terms of form, in terms of squad depth, Cork are beyond Dublin. But Dublin have it in the loins. Dublin have it in Scully and Bugler and Howard and Kilkenny and Conn. Like, that's where Dublin have it. But I think Cork, in terms of growth and where they're going, Cork have a chance to propel themselves here. And I don't know what you wanted me to do there.
We're back to that again. I asked you a question about what happened to Donegal. That's how you finished it. But what do you smoke me to do about Cork?
I queried the Cork.
That was 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
No wonder we go around in circles in this podcast. Okay, so Donegal had four championship games. They're so tired. Look, I'm not saying it's not real. I do actually think that is the case. I just think that, like, there's a lot of teams more tired than them. I'll talk about the Saturday week in a second. But, like, the truth is, Monaghan, Dublin, Kerry, and who's the other team? Whoever else won this weekend are going into 3 weeks in Mayo. A row in Croke Park next week.
Mayo.
It's a massive ask, and it's under-talked about. And it actually brings me to the Armagh point, because I don't want to take anything away from Kerry, Tommy, and we should talk about the performance, because I think they kind of, as open a championship as it's been, I don't think it feels open anymore after Saturday, because Kerry were brilliant, and they're only getting fitter. And, you know, I don't want to take away, because what we saw in the quarterfinal last year against Armagh, you know, suggests that even if Armagh were at their best, if Kerry were playing as they did on Saturday, I think they would have had too much for them. But Armagh were in a position, I know they were caught. They were caught by, Micheál O'Hare described Mikey Sheehy's goal in the 1978 All-Ireland final as the greatest freak of all time. I would say Sam Mulroy's goal was a much bigger freak.
Yeah.
And the greatest freak of all time was the only reason they lost to Louth. They put themselves in that position and Louth kept themselves in it. We all discussed this last week. But at the same time, Armagh were unlucky. Very, very unlucky. But the system has them playing 6 days later in Killarney. And the Harvey Norman started a week. Again, it's nothing fancy. We didn't go for anything fancy this year, but I think it's the most relevant to what happened at the weekend. Armagh this season have played 7 games in 11 weeks. That's 7 full-on championship games in 11 weeks. Unsustainable. That is not... You are supposed to be playing a game every 2 weeks in the championship, realistically. That's the way the game is set up. That's the way the sport is set up. What Armagh have been asked to do this year by winning the Ulster Championship... Fair enough, you've only got a 2-9 chance of being drawn in the first round of Ulster. That's the hardest route through of any other championship. It's not going to happen to everybody. But they went and won the Ulster title. And the reward they get for it is none, basically, whatsoever in the new system. They got an away draw against local rivals. They had to play it in a semi-neutral venue in the end. They lost it, again, by terrible luck. And the reward is to go down to Kerry 6 days later. I understand there's a lot of luck involved between draws and what happened in Louth, but at the same time, I think you're asking far too much of somebody to go through and win their provincial championship, play 7 games. If they had somehow won this weekend, it would have been 8 games in 12 weeks. How is that possible? How is that sustainable?
It's an absolute mess, and we do not have time to get into the structures and the championship and where they...
No, that was last
something,
week.
something's going to have to give, but... You know, you just laid out Armagh's season. They bet Tyrone by a point after extra time in April.
Yeah, by the way, there's 2 extra times in here as well. 90-minute matches.
Tyrone have played 3 games of football in championship this year.
Yeah.
So, I know, I was expecting Matthew to ask me why I didn't have Tyrone third rather than Cork. Tyrone have only played 3 championship games this year. Armagh, Roscommon and Mayo. They've won 2 of them by a point. So, I think you've made a really relevant point. And I think Kieran McGeaney was loath to complain.
He really was, yeah, he really was.
And he bit his lip. And I'd love to hear from Kieran on the season and the year and where everything is right now, because he's very interesting on football. But McGuinness wasn't afraid to talk about the schedule and talk about the lack of... It was interesting to hear how he talked about the lack of ability to train a team in between games. And
he only played four games, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But Seamus Flanagan was on this morning, and this is what I thought looking at them. I thought Donegal looked mentally drained as much as physically drained.
Yeah, and the goal too hard.
I wonder, is Limerick the template like? And you look at the Munster round robin, and that's severe in April and May as well, right? But I just wonder, have Hurling Counties maybe cracked that a little bit better, how they manage their bodies and their minds throughout that, because it's as intense at that time of the season, and then it widens out and there's a bit more of a gap. So I don't think football teams have cracked the calendar. When Donegal lost to Down, I had a lot of people in the game saying to me, wait till you see next year. A lot of counties are going to tank out in their championships, provincial championships.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's going to happen. Mm. I don't know our team is going to give up on the league in Division 1 early, because they can't afford to do it in Division 2 because of the Detaching Cup, and they can't afford to do it in Division 3. But in Division 1, maybe we'll see that. I don't know. Maybe we'll see a lot of new players
but
getting
debuts.
But
it didn't benefit Donegal.
No.
Donegal won Division 1.
It didn't benefit them to go out early in Ulster.
Yeah, but I don't think they planned that. I just think that happened. I just think they got caught.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I don't think it's a template, is what I mean, because sure, it didn't work for them.
Absolutely. Yeah,
but maybe if you plan the rest of your year around that happening, you know, like Seamus as well was talking about this, like, master plan. Like, no, you can't, you know, if it happens by accident, of course, but you're saying there that they might tank out in their provincial championships.
We're talking about Donegal here, but I don't feel sorry for Donegal. Donegal lost the match to Down. They've had loads of time. They've only played four championship games. It's their own fault if they're shattered. That's bad management. That's bad preparation. That's bad. That's not giving them downtime, whatever it might be. They were probably amped up for too long and doing too much. If they're mentally drained, that's mental more than physical. Armagh have been asked to play too many games, and more than anybody else in the country. And they've been punished for winning.
But lads, like...
I don't know what the solution is, but the solution is a longer lasting championship. It just is. It's 7 games in 11 weeks. It's too much, like.
Yeah, and also, Armagh are coming from Ulster, and we have been bound by provincial championships for 140 years.
It's ultimately what it comes down to, isn't it?
Like you're looking at the form lines here. Kerry have played 5 games. They played Clare, they played Cork, and then there are 3 All-Ireland Series games.
One
Cork
have played Limerick, Kildare.
Limerick, and then Kerry in a Munster final, and then 2 All-Ireland Series games. Like, if you're coming from Munster, like, it's a lot easier. And, like, you know, and even if they seed the Munster Championship, it's going to be even easier. So, you know, I think if we're serious about retaining the split season as it is, well, then we've got to rip up the script. Then we've got to get a calendar review committee with the same teeth that Jim Gavin's football review committee had, and properly go in and take it seriously. And maybe Derek Kent, as GA president, will take that as one of his big things to take on. But at the minute, we've run out of road in the championship. There's no more room to give, and we saw the GA eat its life alive at the weekend with the Touching Cup and the Hurling quarterfinals and the All-Ireland Series. And look, yeah,
from here on in it's grand, but except for the teams that have to play 3 weeks in a row this weekend,
and the teams that are already gone as a result of it.
Yeah,
you know?
We're basically out of time. We've run out of road in this podcast as well. Just a reminder though that you can we have tickets thanks to Harvey Norman to give away for both quarterfinal days. Just tell us which day you'd prefer to go to, and tell us what you'd change about Tommy's power rankings. He has, as a reminder, Kerry 1, Galway 2, Cork 3, Louth 4, Tyrone 5, Armagh 6, Donegal 7, Monaghan 8, Mayo 9, Dublin 10. That's what Tommy has left. 8 of the teams in the that are left in the top 10, and Armagh and Donegal as well.
As Matthew and Mick have learned, if you come at me, I will defend myself. So do your best.
But you'll get tickets. You might get tickets to Croke Park for it. So let us know if you know whether you want Saturday or Sunday. WhatsApp us to 087-9180-180 or email us enter@offtheball.com. And just before we go, obviously Dublin Galway will main event Sunday in Croke Park. We haven't mentioned yet, and it's like going to be an incredibly, I'd imagine, an emotional occasion, that, like, the death announced last night of double All-Ireland winner with Galway, Paul Clancy, after a battle with cancer. This is just shocking, horrible news, Tommy. I'd imagine it's I imagine it's going to have a big, big cloud over next Sunday.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, the news only came through this morning. And our thoughts are with Paul and his family and Mike Cullen, his club, and, you know, the people of Galway who were very close to him, very fond of him. And it's been a really tough couple of years. You know, he's been sick for a few years. Like the family recently lost Don Connellan, a brother-in-law of his as well, in the last couple of years too. Roscommon legend and Mike Cullen legend. And it's very difficult to square something like that off.
Yeah.
You know, 49 years old, a young family, so involved in his community and his club. He's a two-time All-Ireland winner. He should be standing out on the field in Croke Park and waving up with his Galway brethren 25 years on from 2001.
Yeah, we heard an awful story that he had his suit measured for it last week. Yeah. So, you know, like, that's just a...
He should be there. And it's awful, so...
One of the most lovable and, like, memorable football teams of all time, I would say. Three different ages in this group, I don't know. But, like, for me, like, to lose a guy from, like, that generation is just, like... it's hard to get your head around, really, you know. So, condolences to his family.
We saw the Galway team pay a beautiful tribute to John O'Mahony a couple of years ago when John O passed. And, you know, Pádraig Joyce would have been very close to Paul Clancy. And I'm sure it's going to have an impact on the group this week, but they will, you'd imagine, pay tribute to them in the way that they will at the weekend. And Croke Park is where Paul Clancy produced one of the greatest ever kick passes in an All-Ireland final. Joyce slipped it to him in around the 45. Meehan took off over his shoulder.
Oh,
yes. He spun and he whipped it into his path and it was stuck into the top corner. And we were really lucky to spend a bit of time with Paul a couple of years ago on the football pod in Croke Park. Such a gentleman and such a nice fella. And we're all gutted to hear the news today.
Yeah, there you go. The assister of probably the best All-Ireland final goal of all time. Again, massive condolences to all his family and friends and to everybody in Galway football, really. We'll be back with more power rankings for the hurling tomorrow, and we'll be back next Tuesday after the quarterfinals with Tommy and Matthew.
The Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official staff sponsor of the GAA.